I'm pretty confident talking into a mic. Hey, I'm doing it right now. But home projects, I second guess everything. Is that noise normal? Is that water damage? Who do I even call? That's where Thumbtack comes in. Just upload a photo or voice note, and it uses AI-powered search to match you with the right top-rated local pro. So instead of guessing, you get clarity and can hire with confidence. For your next home project, try Thumbtack. Hire the right pro today.
Baseball fans, think you know who's hitting a homer today? Well, FanDuel is giving you a free chance to call your shot with daily dingers. Joining the action is easy. Just make your free pick on who's hitting a home run in their game, and if you're right, you'll get a profit boost to use on your next bet for a chance at extra winnings. You've got nothing to lose and a lot to gain. And don't forget, you can make a free pick every day during the MLB season. It's just another reason why FanDuel is the home for home runs. So, are you ready to play your game today? Join all the action at FanDuel.com/podcast. That's FanDuel.com/podcast to play daily dingers and make your free pick on who's hitting a homer. Play ball and swing for the fences on FanDuel, an official partner of the MLB.
Must be 21 plus and present in Ohio. First online real money wager only. $5 first deposit required. A bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Yeah, there should be some passion. This doesn't have to be boring.
Boring.
Okay, one thing the game needs is more people like you.
Still have grown men run around tight pants.
It's Mookie Betts.
Daniel Bard.
Steve Aoki.
Jared Salt Lamakia.
This is Brock Holt.
Hey, this is John Lester.
Baseball
isn't boring.
Welcome to Baseball Isn't Boring.
Well, it is a pleasure to host another Pitch and Moan. I am your host, Courtney Finnecombe, and I am with my good friend, Josh Nelson, host of Sox Machine. Josh, how are you? Welcome back to the show.
I am grateful to be back, Courtney. We're embarking. I know a lot of your listeners are all across Major League Baseball.
Right.
But if you're a fan of a team in the American League, man, we're in the midst of absolute chaos right now in the final 6 weeks of this season. I can't make heads or tails of what is going on. It seemed, Courtney, Boston was unbeatable. They lose four straight. Here come the Astros, and now they're worried about the Texas Rangers. Will any team finish above 500 in the American League West? Will a team with a losing record make the playoffs? That's the fun this season of covering a team in the American League.
You know, that is so perfectly said, and that's a great segue to kick off our conversation because, you know, this is the first time in 4 or 5 years that we've had exciting things to talk about when it comes to the Chicago White Sox. And as much as it's been a crazy American League, the fact of the matter is the White Sox are still in first place.
Yep.
Now, you know, obviously it's 2.5 games as of right now, and we are going to get into the Tigers because I have been preaching about Detroit, saying that this is not a team that's dead, even without Tarek Skubal, and they're kind of showing me that. But the fact of the matter is that the White Sox are in first place, and it's mid-August. So to me, my first question for you is, when did this stop becoming like, okay, this is a cute kind of fun story. I can talk to Jim and James on Sox Machine about some good topics. That's nice. And then when did it finally kick in that this is like a reality? Like this team might be for real.
I think the series in Cleveland in July, Courtney, where the White Sox lost the first 2 games of that series. And it was one of those, well, here we go. Cleveland has got a really good chance of winning 3, if not mopping the White Sox, winning all 4. And they're going to finally take off, claim the division, run away with it, and we'll see where the White Sox are left behind. Instead, this young White Sox team bounced back, and they won those last 2 games. And they even after like the gauntlet in June where they didn't drown during that 13-game stretch, and even in this last 13-game gauntlet where they went 6-7, but I really feel like that series in Cleveland in July just proved that they were not going to fade. And to your point, here we are in mid-August, and the White Sox, who have already won more games this season than last year already, seem destined to not fading away and being part of this conversation all the way to late September.
You know, and that's a really good point, too, because I feel like there's so many people across baseball that are waiting for this Sox team to fail, right?
Yes.
Like kind of slip off, get into a long losing streak. And to your point, this team has bounced back better than any White Sox team that I've seen in years. Even last week when they just went into Boston again and kind of got their head handed to them by the Red Sox, they then came back and played Cleveland and took 2 out of 3. So it's like they continue to bounce back. They continue to show that they have perseverance, right? Is that the right word? What's the word I'm looking for, Josh? You're much more of a linguist than I am.
Let's be careful there. Perseverance.
Perseverance. Thank you. They continue to show that. And I think it's been a really refreshing thing to see because Sox teams in the last couple of years have not been that way. So my next question for you about this young White Sox team, because they are young, and I think that sort of gets lost in the shuffle when you're on White Sox Twitter and, you know, people are voicing their displeasures after a loss, which is normal, but they are a young team. So what do you view is most sustainable for this White Sox team in the last 6 weeks? And what is least sustainable to you?
Well, that's a really good question. I think most sustainable right now for this White Sox team is going to be their home run power. When you have youth on your side, athletically, you're also in the prime of your strength. And there's quite a bit of surprising power for this Chicago White Sox team. And you still have the veterans as well. And Randall Grichuk, who hasn't hit a home run in a while, but we know that he can get hot. We know that Andrew Benintendi, even during his tenure with the White Sox, still has had back-to-back seasons where he's hit 20 home runs. So it feels like both of these guys have late surges. But when you have Munetaka Murakami and Miguel Vargas and even Colson Montgomery, despite his struggles since June 1st, that these guys can put the ball in the stands. And they're still in top 10 in home runs. So I do not think the home run power is going to fade for the White Sox. The aspect that I'm starting to be a little bit concerned about is their ability to play defense across the field. And will that fade when the pressure continues to mount and the gears start to grind a little bit in this season? We saw it yesterday in their loss against the Cincinnati Reds. Just a simple play in the eighth inning. Miguel Vargas cuts off Luis Angel Acuña at third base, but the throw is high. So the leadoff hitter reaches on base, Courtney. And then all of a sudden, in a blink of an eye, the Reds score 3 runs and they tie the game. And Munetaka Murakami is getting better at first base, but he's not a terrific first baseman defensively.
Agreed.
A lot of these guys are going to be setting career highs in games played. So is that going to start impacting as far as their bodies? Are more balls going to get through the infield? Are they not going to be able to get those fly balls in the gaps we saw at the beginning part of the season? So while I do think home runs are going to be okay, I am worried about just the marathon of the season. If bodies start to break down a little bit and they don't make the rangy defensive plays like they did earlier in the season.
Well, and I brought this up on your podcast a couple weeks ago, too, that my main concern with this White Sox team is fatigue.
Yes.
And to your point, this is, again, young team. And to your point, they're playing the most games they've ever played in their careers. You know, this is truly the dog days of the season. I think it's natural for this young team to hit a wall, right? That doesn't mean they're going to completely fall off, because I don't think this team's capable of that. But I think the fatigue is a real factor that needs to be talked about way more, right? I mean, I just feel like that's a huge factor.
And if you flip it to the other side of town of the Chicago Cubs, right, this is where they're in such a great spot having Alex Bregman at third base, Dansby Swanson at short, and even Nico Hoerner at second base. Defense doesn't seem to slump. And those three guys know what it takes to have a little bit more left in the tank in September to help their teams get across that finish line and into the postseason. Whereas Miguel Vargas doesn't, Colson Montgomery doesn't, Chase Mydroth, or even Sam Antonacci plays a little bit second base. They don't. So this is where the difference between the two sides, where the Cubs are a little bit more veteran, that dichotomy between as far as the experience that the Cubs have compared to the White Sox will be interesting to me to see and how this unfolds for them for the rest of the season. Because if the White Sox defense continues to just have those simple mistakes, it does seem to open the door and it puts a lot of pressure on this White Sox bullpen, Courtney, which is hot or cold the last couple of months.
And honestly, that's we're going to talk a little bit about the trade deadline, because I feel like this is a hot button with a lot of White Sox fandom. And I have my own opinions on it, of course. But I do want to dive a little bit into the AL Central, because kind of like the AL West, nobody really has taken the full reins of this division yet. So we have a team, the Detroit Tigers, trade Tarik Skubal away, traded Casey Mize. But as of right now, on August 12th, since June 1st, they're 37-22.
Yeah.
And this is a team that, as we know, going into the season, was projected to potentially be a World Series contender. So in your opinion, viewing this AL Central right now, are the White Sox truly the best team of that division, or are they just sort of benefiting from a weak AL Central right now?
Good question. I am going to say, with the least amount of confidence I could possibly have, by saying yes, Courtney, I do think that they are the strongest team remaining. Detroit's playing really good baseball, and they can surprise you offensively. And they've had some big starting pitching performances. Melton's having a terrific season. They still have some talent left on the pitching front. But are we seeing the best of the Tigers now? And what happens after this weekend against the White Sox? If they hold their ground and they win that series, well, maybe next week I change my answer and be like, well, the Tigers are finally showing their true colors, despite not having Tarik Skubal and Casey Mize, that there's still enough talent on this team to win this division. I don't know what to make of Cleveland, because with Jose Ramirez, that is not Jose Ramirez. I don't know who that is.
Same.
He looks like he's Jose Ramirez. He runs like Jose Ramirez. He can still play defense like Jose Ramirez. But Jose Ramirez at this point of the season would absolutely scare you with his ability to hit for power. And unfortunately, that hamstring injury that Jose Ramirez has suffered has sapped any type of hand strength that he has. So he can't hit for power right now. So that's maybe 75% at best Jose Ramirez for the Guardians. And they also have some similar issue with the White Sox, where they're pretty young as well. They're counting on a lot of Chase DeLauder and Travis Bazzana to carry that team. And those guys are rookies. And I don't know how much that Joe Adell can provide. They still have very good pitching. The Minnesota Twins have completely shocked me. I don't know how the Twins are doing this. The way that people talk about the White Sox, Courtney, I am easily, hold on, how are the Twins doing this?
I agree with you.
Even without Byron Buxton, right?
Yeah.
They're still floating along. I thought they were going to have the worst record in Major League Baseball this year, just because of all the outside noise with ownership, that if they don't start strong in the first half, that I just thought they were going to trade everybody away and completely collapse in the second half. That hasn't been the case. But out of those four teams right now, I would go White Sox, Tigers, Guardians, Twins, if that makes sense, as far as stacking those four teams.
So here's the conspiracy theory that I'm running with. I haven't really openly publicized this yet, but I'm going to. I honestly think the Tigers needed to pull the Band-Aid off and trade Tarik Skubal. And I almost feel like there's been like a new breath of fresh air in that clubhouse. And I'm not saying Tarik Skubal was a problem at all. I don't think that's the case. But I feel like that was almost hanging over their head. And I don't know. Now it's almost like a fresh start. Like, okay, let's see what we can do now. Let's, like you said, Melton. Melton's been killing it. Job is back. Am I pronouncing it? Yep, Job is back. Yeah. That team may have gotten some new life with that trade. Time will tell.
Yeah, time will tell. Maybe they're winning in spite of the front office.
I think
very,
so.
Very Major League 2, if you remember that movie, where Cleveland traded away Jack Parkman to the White Sox.
Yeah.
In that movie.
I love that movie because the White Sox were the bad guys, and I thought that was amazing. Like, they were the team to beat. So I love that movie. But continue.
Yeah. So maybe they're just that clubhouse might be a little angry at what the front office did, because let's say the Tigers do make the postseason right now.
Yeah.
I don't know how much of a chance they got, even if it is against the Astros or the White Sox. And if they do make the postseason, I can definitely understand Tigers fans' frustrations if they're like, you know what? We really need a Tarik Skubal now, because you never know as long as you get into the playoffs. So I that is a curious situation in Detroit where it really does feel like the 26 guys they have right now in that clubhouse are winning in spite of whatever the front office thought that they were at the trade deadline.
And by the way, as you all know, Josh, I'm all about doing things out of spite. So if that's what Detroit's doing, I salute them. Well, let's quickly jump into the trade deadline because this was a source of a lot of conversation here in Chicago. You know, the Sox didn't do a ton when it came to pitching, specifically starting pitching. They added Luis Castillo, who looked, I think, a little bit better than what his numbers showed in Boston, at least in the beginning of the first couple innings, even though there are some concerns there. But then the White Sox called up Tanner McDougal and, my God, Hagen Smith. Now, do you have confidence that the White Sox are rolling with these young pitchers?
Okay, confidence is the key word here because they're both going to be pitching out of the bullpen.
Correct.
We have seen the Hagen Smith experience, and the good news is he's very difficult to hit. The bad news is he's very difficult to hit. Now, why would that be bad news? Because we're talking about below league average command.
Yep.
And in his first appearance in the major leagues, for him to go two scoreless, two hitless innings, you'd be like, that's phenomenal. Three strikeouts? Heck yeah. Yep. Four walks. Uh-oh.
And we knew it. We knew this. We've seen the Hagen Smith experience for a bit now.
Yeah.
That was a very typical Hagen Smith debut. We all kind of expected it. So the command is that's going to be interesting to watch these next couple weeks here. It's going to be interesting.
He could have an inning, Courtney, where he strikes out the side, but he walked the bases loaded.
Correct.
And that's not so easy on the heart. We haven't seen Tanner McDougal yet.
Right.
And as soon as he got healed, there was real concern that he was about to blow his elbow at the beginning part of the season because he was hitting velocity that we thought that he could peak at, but he was consistent in spring training, hitting 100 miles an hour. And then he was starting to have flexor issues, podcast listeners. So the White Sox had to shut him down. They were hoping to develop him into a starting pitcher this season, but that just did not come to fruition. So as far as having these guys in the bullpen, can the White Sox count on them? No, I think there's very little confidence they're going to have to prove it. Now, Luis Castillo, though, I'm still cautiously optimistic that he can step up and be that number three guy that the White Sox need right now. But the question is, who is the number two guy? Because it seems like Davis Martin is fading. Now, he's going to have a big start on Thursday against the Reds as he only went one inning because Mother Nature had other thoughts. But again, Courtney, again, he gives up multiple runs. That's three straight starts where Davis Martin is giving up multiple runs in the first inning. I'm not sure what is going on with Davis Martin. It really feels like this starting rotation right now is Sean Burke, who's on fire.
On fire.
I hope if you don't have him on your fantasy baseball team, thoughts and prayers for you guys, because he's been a monster the last couple of months. And believe it or not, Anthony Kay continues to be more valuable to this White Sox starting rotation as the season progresses. He's been really solid. So does two starting pitchers you can count on get you into the postseason and outlast everyone in the division? I don't know. I think that's the biggest question mark. But Luis Castillo has done this before, Courtney. So if he can find a second wind, I mean, that's what the White Sox are banking on with this trade deadline is that, yes, this veteran starting pitcher who at times has pitched like a Cy Young quality type of pitcher can find their groove again.
And his numbers were considerably better since May. He had a very rough April where his ERA kind of ballooned a little bit. And then he bounced back a little bit May and June. So the stuff is still there, I feel like. And hopefully we will see tonight. He's pitching tonight against the Reds. We will see if he can kind of bounce back after that Boston start. But I agree with you. I'm cautiously optimistic. I actually think that was a good move by the White Sox because he is the veteran that we kind of need for this staff. But it's going to be interesting. Like we keep saying, it's going to be interesting to see how these next 6 weeks play out in all kinds of ways. Jumping into kind of the off season. So let's say everything goes well. White Sox win the division. They make a little bit of a playoff run. Does this change the way Chris Getz goes into this off season? Is he going to spend some money? What are we looking at?
I think that's a better question for Jerry Reinsdorf and how Jerry feels about the Chicago White Sox organization. I think there are two buckets heading into this offseason, as I can already see that fans are looking ahead, especially if you're a fan of a team that doesn't really have much of a shot of making the postseason. Either you're going, either your team's going to be hyper aggressive before December 1st, where right. they're going to try to take advantage of a lot of teams sitting back. And that's the second bucket, where there are going to be owners that tell their front office, no, you are not allowed to spend before the CBA expires. And that could create a lot of chaos, because the last time we were in a lockout, Courtney, you remember that last week before the deadline? It was absolutely insane.
Yes, it was. Yep.
Of all the veterans signing before yep. the deadline. Deadlines create action. Now, I have been an advocate and in favor of Major League Baseball having a quiet period, in which I think that there's a certain amount of weeks that free agency is open to spur action, because a lot of this drags on. And I know the Players Association is absolutely against that, because then it could be a situation where you're forcing me to make a decision, but that also forces teams to also make decisions immediately. And if everybody's working under the same calendar, and know that this window, soccer's got it, the transfer window. When you right. know this window is coming, then everyone can be better prepared and better ready to make a decision, where I feel like baseball offseason could really drag. For the White Sox and Jerry Reinsdorf, I could see them being in that second bucket. Even though business-wise, as a report came out from the Sports Business Journal, attendance is up for the White Sox.
Yes, as we
TV
know.
TV ratings yep. and subscriptions are up for the White Sox. They are making a lot more money this season than they have the last three seasons. Even though you're making more money, are you making enough money to be a $150 million payroll team? That's the question that I don't know, and that would determine just how aggressive the White Sox are in this offseason. But even looking ahead, I think it's pretty clear they could still have a lot of these core players in their team, Courtney, where they're under cost control.
Yes.
They're pre-arbitration. So that helps keep the payroll low, that you can make a big splash if you wanted to be really aggressive and go after a veteran starting pitcher that you can count on to give you more than 150 innings and 150 quality plus innings that you can pair with Sean Burke to lead the starting rotation. And that type of significant move still doesn't break the bank for you. And you could be aggressive post lockout, whenever that ends.
Yo, it's Jay Uso from WWE.
And I'm Jimmy Uso.
Chumba Casino and WWE are hyped for the biggest event of the summer, SummerSlam.
I know, I can't wait.
There's nothing better to do while we're waiting
than playing Chumba Casino.
Sign up today and you could win a VIP experience
with Chumba Casino and WWE for SummerSlam.
So what are you waiting for?
Play Chumba Casino
and enter for your chance to win.
Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Perfectly said, and I'm actually on the exact same page with that. I think it is a good question for Jerry Reinsdorf. It's really not up to Chris Getz's pocketbook in that regard, but obviously we do have to consider what's going to come down the line this offseason with the lockout. So be interesting for all teams involved.
And I think a team that could be hyper aggressive, because we are hearing that on Monday the sale, the San Diego Padres, will finalize. Yes. Yep. That's a team that I think would be hyper aggressive before the deadline. So if you're looking for two examples, podcast listeners, I think the Padres are going to be hyper aggressive to take advantage of a market, to add talent to their team, to seriously challenge the Los Angeles Dodgers, who seem to be getting older by the week. I mean, we are all getting older by the minute, but that Dodgers team, I don't know, maybe age is going to impact them. Maybe they fade towards the end of the regular season, and maybe they end up being the third seed in the National League. So that, I think the Padres are a team that could be hyper aggressive, where the White Sox could be wait and see.
And that's actually a really good point too, because the Padres have a GM in AJ Preller, new ownership, like you said. They always seem to be aggressive in general. And they're starting to play a lot better now. They're starting to hit, which was their biggest issue earlier in the season. And they're right on top of that National League wildcard that is super competitive. So I agree with you. That will be a team to watch in the offseason for sure. So going into another special night that the White Sox are going to be hosting in September, Tim Anderson this week announced his retirement. You know, very big part of the last core of the White Sox rebuild. As you all know, Josh, you know, a lot of White Sox fans are bitter about that last core, right? We were promised a package of goods that did not.
Where's the parade?
You know, to say the least, you know, it didn't really work out. But with that being said, Tim Anderson himself was a part of a lot of amazing White Sox experiences in his short time with the team. What does a guy like Tim Anderson mean to you and mean to the White Sox?
I learned a lot just as far as covering this game, Courtney, while watching Tim Anderson develop. We were so excited in 2016, the way that he was developing in the minor leagues, the way that he hit at Birmingham. And when he arrived, it's not this power hitting first baseman or corner outfielder. Here is someone who can be playing up the middle for the White Sox that brings a breath of fresh air and a level of athleticism that they really didn't have. Like, can he be a better version of Alexei Ramirez, who was quite good for the White Sox when Alexei was with the team? And then we saw him struggle quite a bit in 2017 and 2018. We found out there was an off the field issue as his best friend was murdered, and that was impacting him. I'm probably one of those that counted him out, didn't know exactly what the White Sox had. He had contact issues. The athleticism was there, but was it ever going to come to fruition as far as his full potential? And then 2019, he figured out how to hit his slider, and he demonstrated power that not a lot of people thought he had, and incredible contact skills. And that was the lesson that I took away from his 2019 season, is that players can, even when they reach the major leagues and they have a couple seasons under them, can still find another level and they can still surprise us. Miguel Vargas is having that transformation for the White Sox this season, where I just didn't know exactly what the White Sox had in the offseason. And now I feel a lot better about Miguel Vargas's future. And that carried for Anderson in 2019 to an amazing 2020 season. I know Jose Abreu won the MVP, but Courtney, Tim Anderson was part of that conversation. And it, honestly, realistic chance of winning the American League MVP in 2020 and, of course, 2021. And just look at how well he hit in the postseason in 2020 and in 2021. It feels like that was a missed opportunity for the White Sox to take advantage of just how well Tim Anderson performed in the playoffs. And then injuries happened and really took out as far as his legs and impacted the final couple of years with the White Sox. But man, it was so much fun watching Tim Anderson play every day from 2019 through 2021. And the type of energy that he brought, it really felt like, even though Jose Abreu was the best hitter on that team, it was Anderson that was the spark plug, and the type of energy that he was bringing to the field that helped fuel those White Sox team to make the transition from being one of the laughing stocks of the American League, being a rebuilding team, into a team that won the American League Central.
You know, and it's apropos we're having this conversation today because it is the anniversary of his now very famous Field of Dreams home run, the stalk off in the corn, very first Field of Dreams ever. And they're having one on Thursday, which I believe is the Twins and the Phillies, I believe is correct. But, you know, everyone talks about that really solidifying what we thought was going to be a couple maybe World Series berths, certainly playoff berths. And obviously, that didn't come to fruition. Now, I have to quote my very good friend, Adam Jones, good friend of the program, Baltimore Orioles Hall of Famer, and he told me, as soon as your legs start going, that's when everything changes as far as a player is concerned. And yeah. I think we saw that with Anderson. And one thing that really stood out to me about his retirement Zoom, and I think we all kind of knew what was sort of going up, maybe not to the depth of what really was going on, was how he talked about his mental health during the game and how, as much as there are good times, this game brought a lot of negativity to him. And I thought him being super vulnerable in that way really showed a lot. You know, I think we, to your point, off the field issue with his friend being murdered, that was terrible, very, very taxing on him. But for him to be so honest about it I thought was really, really refreshing to see.
Yeah, and the White Sox clubhouse during those years for Tim Anderson, even though he was the face of the White Sox organization, it kind of felt like he was alone, because you had the veterans like Lance Lynn and Kendall Graveman on one side of the clubhouse. And then you had the Latino contingent by Jose Abreu's locker all the time. And Tim Anderson would veer often to that group in the White Sox clubhouse, but he's not Latino. So at times it felt like he was even alone in his own clubhouse. And I don't know if the organization really supported Tim Anderson. Really, I could make the case, and this is an entire podcast episode in itself, on how Kenny Williams and Rick Hahn, their failure is supporting their star players multiple times. Just not Tim Anderson, Chris Sale and their entire tenure, just not helping their star players out to go through the rigors of an entire season. I think that's something that Chris Getz has learned, and that's why he's rebuilt the front office and took those lessons, those very painful lessons, and try to build the type of clubhouse culture that they currently have right now. It is a bit heartbreaking though, Courtney, to hear that he had those types of struggles and then anxiety, despite being, I mean, he was in a Dairy Queen national campaign commercial with Bryce Harper.
Right.
He was on the face of a video game for the Nintendo Switch. It does feel like it's a bit heartbreaking to hear that the team itself didn't help support Tim Anderson to the level that he deserved.
And I think that's perfectly well said, because at the end of the day, he was a major part of the organization. He brought us some incredibly exciting moments. And obviously, it's not even close to being all on him why that previous core failed. So to your point, many layers to it. And this is, like you said, could be a whole separate podcast episode that we are not going to dive into today. But I completely agree with you. And I think it's actually great that the White Sox are honoring him on September 17th.
Yes.
The White Sox will be bringing back their Southside City Connects, which I personally think are one of the best City Connects ever, in my humble opinion. So that'll be very exciting. So one final question for you, Josh, and I always appreciate your time. 6 weeks from now, end of September, what are we saying about this 2026 White Sox team?
All right, I'm still going to be bold. I still think the White Sox are going to win the American League Central.
Okay.
And I do think that they're going to stay ahead of the Houston Astros and be that surprise second seed. I just believe in this offense. I believe that there's another surge coming from this White Sox offense. The schedule, at least on paper, gets a bit easier for them in September. It might require a last 2 week run if they even fall to second or third place in this division. But the way that their schedule stacks up at the last week of September, I do feel like the White Sox will find a way to win this division.
And to your point, on the offense, I agree with you. There are three guys, the only three guys in baseball right now with 25 plus home runs. And that, of course, is Miguel Vargas, Colt Montgomery, and Munetaka Murakami. So I agree with you. Let's strap it down for the final 6 weeks. It'll be a blast in our world. It'll be a blast on White Sox Twitter. Josh, always appreciate having you on. Thank you.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Courtney.